The first case on the calendar is United States of America versus Keith Penn. Counsel, are you ready to proceed? Please approach the podium. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Richard Suma. I represent Keith Penn. On issue one, my mission today is to convince the court of a number of things. The first point is that the Supreme Court's decision in Shuler abrogated the law of this court with respect to the interpretation of the ACCA phrase involving manufacture, distribution, or possession with intent to manufacture or distribute a controlled substance. Now, although Shuler told us what this phrase means, Shuler did not decide, actually, whether the elements of a Florida sale of cocaine necessarily entail the conduct of distribution of a controlled substance. And that's because the only issue presented in Shuler, the question presented was whether a generic offense analysis applied. And the Supreme Court arrived at its test for the first time, this test that was advanced for the first time in briefing in the Supreme Court. The next point is that a Florida sale or delivery of a controlled substance is a single indivisible offense. And the final point is that this court may not import the definitions of distribution or delivery that are found in Title 21, Section 802. And I'll go in more detail there. The reason for that is that Section 802 states that the definitions therein apply in this subchapter of Title 21. So under the canon of expressio unius, those definitions do not apply in Title 18 or ACCA. And that is why Congress in ACCA had to specify that the term controlled substance must be adjudicated under the definition of controlled substance in Section 802. Only that definition was imported into ACCA. And ACCA did not incorporate any other definitions such as distribution or delivery. And this is also shown because Shuler requires the conduct of distribution. It's a plain language analysis.
Can I ask you to address this? So I'll just say, just for myself, I tend to agree with your three points. But doesn't, even if we just use sort of the common, ordinary definition of distribution, you know, selling things, moving things from one place to another, et cetera, isn't that broad enough to cover what Florida outlaws in its prescription on selling cocaine?
No, because Florida provides a very specific definition of the term sell, which appears in the standard jury instructions, which come in every case of sale, whether the information alleges sale or whether the information alleges sale or delivery, the jury is always instructed, as they were instructed in Mr. Penn's case.
But the Florida jury instruction isn't necessarily just, unless the Florida Supreme Court speaks on it, it's not necessarily, I know it's a strange system, but it's not necessarily constitutionally correct, right? Put it that way.
I understand perfectly what you're saying. But on the other hand, if the jury is instructed like this way in every case, as they were in Mr. Penn's case, the jury is instructed that sell means to transfer or deliver, and that's how the case is argued to a jury, that is the law of Florida, unless it's challenged and overturned. And we know juries have been instructed this way in Florida for approximately and maybe more than 30 years, and it's not going to be overturned, because I can tell you both the prosecution likes it and the defense likes it. The prosecution likes it because it eliminates the burden of proving the element of consideration. And in some cases, it deprives the defense of instruction on a lesser included offense of attempt of delivery. And the defense bar likes it too, because without it, a client might be convicted of two counts sale and delivery instead of one count in many cases based upon the single act. So this law is well established in Florida that sale means to transfer or deliver, and by standard jury instruction and statute, delivery includes an attempted delivery.
Right.
And so
why doesn't distribution, though, in the federal statute encompass delivery, sell, attempted delivery? I mean, it seems odd to me to define distribution in such a way that you only distribute if you've successfully delivered the product to the person, the end user. So why wouldn't we just define it that way?
Because I think Schuler is instructive on this too. Also, because Schuler notes that under the plain language, a conduct is a physical act, not a legal construct. And interpreting ACCA, consider, for example, the definition in the force clause, the elements clause, which speaks of the use or attempted use of physical force against another. So in ACCA itself, we know that when Congress wants to include an attempt for conduct, and here the conduct is force, Congress says explicitly it uses the term attempt. But Congress did not do that in Section 924E2A2. So under this, the Rosillo rule, they employ the term attempt in one provision and exclude the term attempt in another, which means attempt doesn't satisfy the threshold.
So, I mean, would your position be that attempt crimes can just never be serious drug offenses? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yes, I do believe that. Inchoate offenses do not qualify as serious drug offenses. And if the court will look at the decision of in the Fields case in the Sixth Circuit, particularly in the concurring decision of Judge Murphy, he makes that point very clear. In the Supreme Court, the Solicitor General argued that this test is easy to apply, and Judge Murphy said, well, the reason it's easy to apply is because it excludes inchoate offenses. And yes, I definitely feel that's the correct interpretation of this provision. And Schuler also teaches us that the universe of state predicate crimes is definitely different than the universe of federal predicate crimes because the text is different. It compels a different conclusion. If the Congress wanted to import all these definitions from Title 21, it could have said a serious state drug offense is any state offense that would also be an offense under federal law. That would have incorporated all the definitions. And I wish they had done that, because maybe in that case we would have incorporated the definitions of the federal drug offenses, which includes a mens rea element. But Schuler told us don't incorporate definitions from Title 21. And that's where I come out and say, because a Florida sale of cocaine or any controlled substance can be accomplished by a delivery, and according to jury instructions and statute, a delivery can be accomplished by an attempted transfer.
Yeah, let me go back to the idea that, so I've read the Fields case. Let me go back to the idea that inchoate crimes are just never encompassed. Why isn't the language of the statute broad enough to encompass inchoate offenses in the sense that an attempt to distribute necessarily involves the conduct of distribution?
Because it doesn't necessarily. Well,
so how do you get to that point, I guess?
It doesn't necessarily encompass the conduct of distribution because the Supreme Court and the language of statute suggests that the conduct of distribution is, according to its plain language, the actual distribution. And my time is up, so I'll come back for a rebuttal.
No, your time is not.
It's not okay.
Yeah, I know you want to sit down, but yeah. I guess that just seems like a circular argument to me. You're saying we're defining distribution to not include attempts to distribute, and then we're saying that attempts don't fit within the statute.
I'm not saying that we define it to exclude attempts. We think that the plain language Congress defined it to exclude attempts.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's say I have a bunch of drugs and I make a plan to sell those drugs to someone, but that person is an undercover agent, and so the sale actually doesn't go through. Have I distributed those drugs? Have I done something involving the distribution of drugs? Is that a crime involving the distribution of drugs?
You have not. That doesn't satisfy the test.
So the only way then to distribute drugs, in your view, is to physically, successfully hand the drugs to a third party and then receive what, cash in return?
Well, the actual distribution or transfer, yes, is required, but the actual cash in return is not required because of the way Florida defines sale. It actually excludes the...
Right, you can do it for free, right? Yeah, right. I could just hand them out
without a consideration.
Right. Where are you getting that definition of distribution? Is that just sort of the common, ordinary meaning of distribution? Is that what you're saying?
It's a plain language meaning, and it also comes from the Supreme Court's use of the term conduct. We're also talking about the plain meaning of the term conduct, and conduct means an act, not an intent. And that's why that was relevant in Shuler, because the question in Shuler was about the intent or whether the crime encompassed a mens rea element. And Shuler said, we're not concerned with intent. Shuler said, we're concerned with conduct. And if you go with the plain language definition of Congress,
your position is, if I'm attempting to sell, and I'm attempting to sell to this individual who's approaching me, and he becomes suspicious, thinking that there's a law enforcement officer around the corner, and I'm about to give him the drugs, and he takes off, that would just be attempted, and it would not...
That would be an attempt, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I'll save time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, Jordan Meyer on behalf of the United States. The plain meaning of the term distributing and distribution includes attempted transfer. And so for that reason, the government's position is the Florida sales statute categorically fits within the conduct of distributing as that term is used in the ACCA statute. So we think we went on the merits of this issue. But to take a step back further, the government's position is that Travis Smith is entirely consistent with Shuler, and that Travis Smith was reaffirmed in Xavier Smith, and therefore, really, the resolution of the first two issues in this case.
Yeah. But Travis Smith was about the mens rea, right? I mean, it wasn't about this issue, right?
Travis Smith, the issue was whether or not the offense involved the conduct of distribution, is what it held, and so Travis Smith held that it did, and that because it didn't require comparison to a generic offense or didn't, by the plain language, require consideration of mens rea, that the Florida statute did involve the conduct of distribution.
Right.
So implicit in that is a finding.
Yeah, but I mean, we don't, and I guess maybe this is just about how we evaluate precedents. I mean, it's sort of my understanding that we don't sort of see implicit holdings and precedents resolving legal questions that were never presented to the court. I mean, was the question here actually presented to the court there? Was it resolved by the court?
We would characterize this as an overlooked argument, an overlooked reason as to why the Florida statute does not involve distribution that wasn't presented to the court. But the holding of that case was that the Florida statute does, that the sale of cocaine does involve distribution, and it's that conduct. So we think that this case is dictated by Travis Smith and Xavier Smith, and that Shuler doesn't really change the analysis. As far as we can tell, I don't think, especially reading the Connage case, which has a very lengthy discussion of Shuler, we don't think Shuler really changed this, clarified, but we don't think in substance changed this court's precedence very much. But even if this court disagrees with us about whether or not Travis Smith and Xavier Smith are binding or even instructive, we think we went on the merits of this issue exactly because the plain meaning of the term distribution and distributing is going to include an attempted transfer.
That were the case, though, so the statute reads, you know, involving distribution, manufacturing, or possession with the intent to distribute or manufacture, wouldn't your read of distribution just eliminate that third clause? Because whenever I possess with intent to distribute, I'm attempting to distribute?
I don't think so. And I think Florida law demonstrates this, that you can distribute without possessing with intent to distribute. It's not common that those, usually there's a factual overlap. So if you prove one, you've proven the other, but there are some circumstances, especially in with aiding and abetting liability, where you can aid and abet the distribution or sale of an offense without aiding and abetting the underlying possession.
But normally when you have a distribution, if you're being charged with possession, it's because you've been found in possession of the controlled substance as opposed to selling, which would be the distribution.
No, I think that's correct. But we think.
Yeah. So you actually answered the opposite issue that I asked. So Okay. You explained how distribution could cover more conduct than possession with the intent to distribute. I'm asking, how does your read of distribution allow any separate operative effect for possession with intent to distribute?
Sure. So I'm thinking that. Right. I guess I'll get back to an aiding and abetting theory. You can aid and abet a sale, right? And you cannot aid and abet the possession.
So I guess my question, just to make it maybe clearer.
Yeah.
So when could I possess cocaine with the intent to distribute that cocaine, which is a separate element,
right. And
not, under your read, be involved in distributing cocaine?
Oh, sure. I guess the answer is maybe a little bit more obvious. You can possess something without engaging in the conduct of attempting to transfer it. So that's before the transfer has started.
So, for example, if you have the kilos of cocaine in your home, but you're in possession of it.
Right. And maybe you intend, I don't know, a couple of weeks from now to transfer that, to sell it. You're possessing it with the intent to sell it at a future time, but you haven't actually engaged in the conduct of attempting to transfer those drugs to somebody else. Because I think you can possess with the intent to sell something without even having a particular sale purchaser in mind. And so I think a delivery probably does contemplate a more specific course of action, or at least the commencement of the delivery process for it to qualify as an attempted transfer. And I will note, just the plain meaning, once you've engaged in the process of transferring drugs from a seller to a buyer, you're engaged in the conduct of distributing or delivering, even if the sale is interrupted or you ultimately doesn't come into fruition. I think of it this way. If I stop my mailman on the way to my door to deliver a package and I ask him, what are you doing? He's going to say he's delivering the mail, even if he hasn't completed the delivery. Just the common usage of the term distribution and deliver is going to encompass that intermediary period from the commencement of the transfer all the way to the completed transfer. But that's the way the statute's written in the present participle of distributing. So we think that favors covering the whole course of conduct, and that does not require, by its plain language, a completed transfer. And so that aligns perfectly, I think, with Florida law on this issue. They're defined the same way. We don't dispute. I don't think there's really much substantive disagreement about Florida law. In order to prove a sale under Florida law, you've got to prove delivery.
Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
I apologize for interrupting you, but I've been waiting for you. Pause to breathe.
I'm sorry.
Here's the interruption, but the answer to the question of when can possession with intent exist without distribution? If you possess, let's say, cocaine, and you intended to use it yourself, not distribute it, but use it yourself, and then you changed your mind, either in that status of possession with the intent, but you had done nothing, you hadn't attempted to distribute it, that would give operative effect to possession with intent, would it not?
No, I agree with that exactly, Your Honor. Completely, yeah. And so we think that you can, obviously, you can possess with an intent to distribute something without taking any affirmative steps to actually effectuate a transfer, which we think would distinguish that from distribution.
So then your definition of distribution, and just correct me if I'm wrong, so your definition of distribution would be something along the lines of sort of physically attempt to distribute, as opposed to, I mean, usually when we talk about attempts, we have a substantial step, which would be, for example, just getting the cocaine plus intent, but you're defining it somewhat differently. So I guess, how are you defining it?
I don't want to say that a substantial step with intent to transfer wouldn't qualify. We just think that a substantial step would constitute the act of attempt to transfer that would fit under the statute. So I don't think.
But see, doesn't that just fall into the possession problem? Because if I possess, I mean, to go back to Judge Carnes's hypothetical, if I possess the cocaine, right? I've got the cocaine. That's my substantial step, and now I form the intent to distribute it. That seems like that mushes in with the distribution definition that you're asking us to follow.
So I guess maybe our distinction would be on sort of the intent part of the analysis, of that you have to intend like an actual specific type of transfer. That would be my understanding. I don't think if you, like I said before, if you possess drugs and your intent is to sell them, but you have no sort of concrete buyer in mind, I think that would fall under the possession with intent statute, but you wouldn't have engaged in an attempted transfer or begun the act of distributing those drugs. So we do think that there can be distinctions drawn, and I do want to say it's not just federal law. If you look at the term distribution in the controlled substance context, as far as we can tell, in every circumstance, it always involves the act of attempted transfer. So it would be very strange, we think, for Congress to use the term distribution in a way that's inconsistent with the way it's defined in the context of controlled substances pretty much elsewhere.
Let me ask you this. So your friend on the other side of the case says that attempt crimes, inchoate crimes, should never be covered. Are you arguing that they should always be covered?
I'm arguing, I think, that the court doesn't have to decide that issue in this case. I think we would probably defend inchoate crimes under Shular as necessarily entailing the conduct of distribution or manufacture. I don't think we have to decide that today here in this case, because distribution is defined in part specifically as attempted transfer, and that's just within the ordinary meaning of that term. So I don't think that's an issue this court has to resolve, but I do think the government's position would be that it does necessarily entail the conduct of distribution, because that is the intent behind the inchoate crime, would be to effectuate the ultimate distribution of the drugs. We think that falls within Shular's necessarily entails analysis. And we know from Shular and we know from White and Connage that distribution doesn't actually have to appear in the statute as a formal element. It can be inferred elsewhere from the other elements that do appear in the statute. So I think this precedent would allow that, but I don't think this court has to decide that exact issue in this case because of what we contend is the ordinary meaning of the term distribution. If the court doesn't have any further questions about the Shular issue, I would like to turn to the Wooden issue just because I think you may disagree with the government's position about Shular not really changing the legal landscape. We do think Wooden does change the separate occasions analysis precedent. But what I do want to say is that it actually supports the government's position in this case, that these offenses occurred on separate occasions. And the reason is Wooden recognizes, while it endorses a multi-factored analysis, it recognizes that offenses separated by substantial gaps in time, as we have in this case, it was 30 days. The ordinary meaning of the term occasion is consistent with that sort of gap. So, and Wooden expressly recognizes this. It says substantial gaps in space and time, and then it cites favorably to precedent, circuit precedent, saying that one day, a gap of one day is sufficient. So the gap in this day is, in this case, between the offenses is 30 days. And so we think a plain application of Wooden supports the district court conclusion that this is these were on separate occasions.
Can I just return back to the other issue briefly? So you've read the Fields case from the Sixth mm-hmm. Circuit. Do you think that we need to disagree with the Sixth Circuit to rule in your favor, or can we resolve this issue purely on the definition of distribution separately from manufacturing?
I think we could resolve this with looking just at distribution. And I know that this court's going to be probably talking about Fields tomorrow with one of my colleagues. We don't think that that issue, we think we can you can resolve that on the plain, plain understanding of distribution without having to consider manufacturing. If there are no further questions from the court, we would simply ask that to, obviously there are multiple issues, so we would ask the court to affirm, you know, not just the finding that these constitute serious drug offenses under the plain meaning of this, the term distribution, but also the district court's finding that these occurred on separate occasions under Wooden. I guess I should note that the government's position, there was a 28-J letter that was filed about the Sixth Amendment issue with Wooden arising. I don't think, first of all, that's inconsistent with not just this court's precedent. The government's position is inconsistent, I think, with every court's precedent, but that this has to be a jury finding. But I do want to say if this court does want to consider that issue, it would be plain error, and there would just be no plain error, we think, in this case. So although the government's position that the separate occasions inquiry requires an admission by the defendant or a finding by the jury, this court disagrees with that, and there wouldn't be plain error under the facts of this case, just because it wasn't disputed in the pre-sentence report. Actually, it was stated in the statement of facts in this case that the offenses occurred 30 days apart, and the defendant was asked during his plea colloquy whether or not he disagreed with anything in the statement of facts, and he did express some disagreement, but he didn't disagree with the dates that were given. So we think that the defendant, even for Sixth Amendment purposes, has probably admitted that they were 30 days apart, and under Wooden, that's sufficient. That would be sufficient as a matter of law to constitute separate occasions. So for all those reasons, we would just simply ask, if there are no other further questions, we would simply ask this court to affirm Mr. Penn's ACCA sentence.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Suma? You have 3 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm particularly concerned with the court's extensive discussion and questioning about the ACCA conduct of possession with intent to distribute, because consideration of that conduct, I think, blurs what is at issue in this case. The ACCA conduct of distribution is entirely separate from the ACCA conduct of possession with intent to distribute. And when I argue that distribution excludes all attempts, I'm not necessarily arguing that possession with intent to distribute excludes all attempts, because you have that phrase, intent to distribute. We're not briefing what that means. We're briefing what distribution means. And because Shuler requires conduct, we're briefing what the conduct of distribution means. So in my view, I think the court should not consider possession with intent to distribute or attempt to harmonize what distribute means in possession with intent to distribute. I think, frankly, the court should ignore that phrase.
So you think we can adopt a definition of distribution that is different than the definition of distribute in the same phrase?
Yes.
Okay.
Because the second phrase is modified by the terms intent to distribute. It is a different, plain meaning. So theoretically, and I'm not conceding anything because I'm not arguing this case, theoretically, possession with intent to distribute encompasses an attempt to distribute because it's a mental state. The defendant attempted to distribute, he intended to actually transfer, and therefore that phrase has a different meaning or could reasonably have a different meaning than what is meant in the prior term, conduct of distribution. That's my point. I don't want the court to try to rule on what possession of intent to distribute means, because that's not involved in this case. ACCA describes alternative conduct.
But normally in statutory construction, the use of a particular word in the same statutory provision doesn't have different definitions.
That's true. But in this case, you have to look at all the text, and in the second conduct.
I think you might be misunderstanding the issue. I mean, the issue is the word distribute has to mean the same thing as distribution. I think you agree with that idea. I get your point that intent to distribute is different than just distribution, but I think you might be misunderstanding the implications of that. The implications of that are that you are winning, not that you are losing.
Okay, thank you very much. I will sit down with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you both of you. Have a good day. Try to stay warm. As a Floridian, it's very cold here today. Montgomery is not welcoming today. The next case on